from the historic campus of Hillsdale College in Hillsdale, Michigan, where the good, the true, and the beautiful are taught, nurtured, and honored, this is the Radio Free Hillsdale Hour, bringing the activity and education of the college to listeners across the country.
We want the information as policy leaders. We want a process. We want to then use that information as an influence. But, of course, making a logical, deductive, reasoning solution to things.
This is your host, Scott Bertram, and that's Dr. Scott Atlas, our first guest on today's program. Dr. Atlas is a member of the new Hillsdale College Academy for Science and Freedom, also a former advisor to President Trump and a member of his White House Coronavirus Task Force. He's Robert Wesson Senior Fellow in Healthcare Policy at the Hoover Institution, too. We talk at length with Dr. Atlas about the new Academy for Science and Freedom at Hillsdale College. Dr. Atlas, thanks so much for joining us.
I'm happy to be here. Thanks for having me.
We are excited about the launch, which was late last year, of the new Hillsdale College Academy for Science and Freedom. You're one of three fellows to begin this effort. Tell us a bit about what this is. What is the Academy for Science and Freedom that you are now a part of here at Hillsdale College?
Sure. So we have seen exposed, really, by the pandemic this past couple of years, that there is a very precarious, frankly dangerous situation that has evolved in science, and that is that science has become politicized. Science has become, instead of the basis of truth arising from debate and the free exchange of ideas, it's become quite the opposite, where any counter-narrative, meaning narrative that is either disagreeing with or different from the so-called prevailing wisdom, is actively suppressed. Universities nationwide have gone on this quest to inhibit the free exchange of ideas. And this is very fundamental, not just to science, of course, but to all truth-seeking in the Western world. I mean, I hate to sound like it's exaggerating, but it's not just even the United States. The world depends on this process of information, critical thinking about that information, disagreements being solved by the evidence. And the process of science really is fundamentally that free exchange of ideas. So this academy is going to not only go through and sort of make visible what has happened to the scientific process, but the solutions need to be explored so that we can get back to what originally was the foundation of these sorts of principles and the foundation of how we solve problems in the country.
The Academy for Science and Freedom features the work of Dr. Atlas, along with Dr. Jay Bhattacharya from Stanford University, Dr. Martin Kulldorff from the Brownstone Institute. And you mentioned that silencing the intimidation of those whose interpretations differ from the narrative. You've experienced this personally. Tell us a little about what you've been through and what you've experienced here.
Well, sure. When I was asked to by the president to come and help during the biggest healthcare crisis in the century, I am and have been for more than 15 years a health policy researcher and scholar. I came, with the sole motivation of stopping people from dying, of engaging in looking at the data, thinking critically about what was happening in a very complicated situation. And, I anticipated going through sort of a process of what we do in an academic setting, in the traditional setting of science, medical science. I had been in medical science for 25 years before going into health policy. So that's not what I found. What I found instead was that, we're a very politicized country, frankly. That's obvious. And I went to help make the explanations both to the president as well as to articulate logic and critical thinking to the American public. And when that happened, it was clear that because I differed from what the mainstream media wanted, because I differed from what my own university, Stanford University faculty, wanted to hear, because I, in my opinion, because I was standing next to a president that, half the country reviled, I became a target. So it didn't matter what I said, it had to be stopped. Because what I said defied what they wanted to hear. They, the prevailing narrative, you know, the basically the lockdown crowd. And so, you know, this was not acceptable, and I was stunned by this. And so what happened was that not only was there a massive media attack against me and others who said that, but there was also an attack by university professors. And, you know, it's a very politicized, the universities, I don't think it's a surprise to say that most universities are highly politicized. Mm-hmm. And so, again, this is very destructive, not, you know, and it even goes more, frankly, I mean, when you talk about the future of the country, you're talking about educating our children. And this is where Hillsdale, of course, that's Hillsdale's mission, to develop leaders, the next generation of leaders, and to educate the next generation. And when the universities are entrusted with the most important mission of any civilization, which is to take care of its children and educate them, we cannot have that process contaminated by politics. We cannot have children learn critical thinking if they don't have access to the information, including specifically information that they may disagree with. And so when that is suppressed, we destroy the future of the country, frankly. And so this academy, with my colleagues, Drs. Jay Bhattacharya and Martin Kulldorff, we hope to really make this a very visible platform for logical discourse, for evidence-based thinking, for critical thinking, for people who agree and disagree. Mm-hmm. And let's have the evidence come out on issues, nothing really limited at all to the pandemic. This is really a fundamental process because, you know, again, the principles that we use in science that we should have used in the pandemic were violated, but they are fundamental to solving all problems, including outside science, frankly. This is really the tenet of freedom in a country like the United States, is access to free exchange of information, to be able to articulate opinions and interpretations of data, and the country needs this, frankly. There's nothing more urgent.
Dr. Scott Atlas with us, a new member of the Hillsdale College Academy for Science and Freedom. You talked about this a little, but why is Hillsdale College the right partner for you and your colleagues in this effort?
Well, I mean, this is a perfect fit, really. My colleagues and I all agree that, you know, Hillsdale stands for seeking a discourse that is both civilized but also free, and that means free from the constraints of what, you know, sort of the powers that be may or may not want to hear. For instance, I mean, Hillsdale's mission really is centered on liberty and you know, the not just freedom of speech but scholarly works, looking at data, having you know, very reasoned discussions, and has stood for that sort of liberty of ideas, and that is, again, the whole point of this academy. That's the whole point of science. That's really integral to everything that we can do as a country, make sure that we solve all problems that come up. So we're very delighted, really, that Dr. Arne, as president of Hillsdale, and the Hillsdale network really are so supportive of this endeavor. And frankly, because of forming this academy, we hope to make this another really example of leadership of Hillsdale College for the nation.
Dr. Atlas, will pause right there. Back in a moment with more with Dr. Scott Atlas and Hillsdale College's new Academy for Science and Freedom. I'm Scott Bertram. This is the Radio Free Hillsdale Hour. Welcome back to the Radio Free Hillsdale Hour. I'm Scott Bertram. We've been talking with Dr. Scott Atlas, a member of Hillsdale College's new Academy for Science and Freedom, a program seeking to promote and facilitate the free exchange of scientific ideas. We've heard often through the pandemic, Dr. Atlas, from some of our leaders saying we have to follow the science when it comes to deciding policies and restrictions. In your view, is that a proper application of science to use it as a replacement for, say, prudential decision making on behalf of our leaders?
Well, I mean, what you're getting at is what is the role of science in sort of policy making? And science and I think we've learned several things from the pandemic that have been exposed here. Number one, we cannot trust people just automatically on the basis of credentials. All of us as individuals have to use our own critical thinking and reasoning to derive conclusions from what so-called experts present. Not all experts are actually experts at all. We've seen that. The trust in leadership, the expert classes have been severely harmed because of their erratic nature. But in addition, the more fundamental question that you're asking is that science and all sort of quote-unquote experts are there, even in the best of all worlds, to provide their interpretation of data that then real leaders in leadership positions use when they, the leaders, end up making the policy decisions. And this is sort of the work that I've been doing for many, many years, taking medical science background and consideration of all aspects of public health, for instance, in devising policy. You never, for instance, would use an expert level opinion on a single disease to then, generate the policy. I mean, this is just a piece of the information. It's a much bigger task to formulate a beneficial policy or a policy solution for something than just looking at one specific entity, one specific aspect of an entity. Leaders take information, make much bigger, broader considerations of the impact and the relevance and the role of policymaking, and then formulate the policy. So, again, what has happened here, as you're implying, is that our government leaders in this pandemic have somehow said, oh, we're going to follow the scientists, whatever they say. Well, that's not leadership. That's not appropriate. That's a complete abrogation of the role of the people in charge.
Dr. Scott Atlas with us with the Academy for Science and Freedom at Hillsdale College. As you look back on now nearly 2 years, Dr. Atlas, of this pandemic and the things that we've discussed here in our conversation, can you put a finger on how much the public's trust in science generally perhaps has been damaged in these past 2 years?
I think it's been tremendous. There's been a tremendous loss of trust, and appropriately so. And this is, the longer term goal of our academy is to be more transparent, give the information, educate everyone on what happened and how we move forward to restore that trust. Because frankly, we don't want to get into a position where there is no such thing as fact. We can't be in a position where, expert knowledge is irrelevant, because expert knowledge is very important. We all know that. But we must have it in its appropriate context, and we must take experts and have them use their expertise in what they are actually expert at, rather than have it contaminated by politics, financial corruption, the corruption of power and influence, all of these secondary things that are really destructive to truth seeking. So the trust in experts and in science has been tremendously damaged, a part of which is simply a lack of transparency of information. The censorship itself has caused people to not understand the why of how things were decided. And we also have a situation where there's been erratic statements that are contrary to the evidence that simply normal Americans can understand. And when you can't defend your position by any way other than stopping anyone from disagreeing, you're revealing the weakness of your argument. And that is what has happened by our so-called expert class. So some of these things defy simple logic. You don't have to be a scientist to use critical thinking, but if you want to be a scientist, you must use critical thinking. And the point of my statement there is that everyone who uses logic and critical thinking can understand some of these statements, mm-hmm. actions, and policies were done contrary to what was beneficial. So, you know, revealing more, having the exchange of ideas is the way to derive the truth, because you like I say, you must have the information at hand to then use your own critical thinking and understand it.
Finally, Dr. Atlas, as we look at the new Hillsdale College Academy for Science and Freedom, what activities do you anticipate being involved with? What kind of productivity do you think we can expect from you and your colleagues at the Academy?
Yes, we're engaged very heavily in devising a very robust output, a working structure and an output from this Academy. We'll start this month, actually, we're going to have frequent seminars. We're going to have group discussions with other scientists and other people in other fields that impact science, such as the media dissemination to the public. We're going to have group working, conferences at the Hillsdale facility. We intend on having students involved. We're going to produce our own research. We hope to explore things like having new format research journals, possibly, or at least propose solutions so that published information can get out quickly and have a more publicly exposed peer review process. We want to work and have consultative arrangements with the various groups to devise their own solutions, because in the end, we all want to have a situation where the population, people, the citizenry, get the benefits of such extraordinary science and other related fields that goes on in the United States without having the suffocation of the most essential part of science, and that is the evolution of thinking, new ideas, people admitting they're wrong when they're wrong. There's going to be a plethora of activities, including publications, including internet-based, including publicly visible and to some extent publicly open seminars and other engagements, so that we can really make this a very impactful organization.
Dr. Scott Atlas, Robert Wesson, Senior Fellow in Healthcare Policy at the Hoover Institution, former advisor to President Trump, also on President's White House Coronavirus Task Force, and now fellow at Hillsdale College's new Academy for Science and Freedom. You, of course, can find out more at hillsdale.edu. Dr. Atlas, thanks so much for joining us here on the Radio Free Hillsdale Hour.
Thank you for having me. Appreciate it.
Up next, we hear from Dr. John R. Lott, founder and president of the Crime Prevention Research Center, about the Carter-Baker Commission on Federal Election Reform. I'm Scott Bertram. This is the Radio Free Hillsdale Hour.
Founded in 1995, GI Pathology is the only physician-owned laboratory in the United States dedicated solely to the practice of gastrointestinal and liver pathology. The company provides the highest quality GI pathology diagnosis made exclusively by one of our fellowship-trained gastrointestinal and liver pathologists. GI Pathology delivers results to its Northern California client base within an industry-leading 24 hours. Call 888-2-GI-PATH or go to www.gipath.com for more information.
The YMCA is welcoming new members to come and enjoy the many choices the YMCA has to offer. The YMCA has a variety of fitness activities, including swimming, aqua aerobics, cardio, weights, group power classes, and booty yoga. There's over 100 classes to choose from. The YMCA is so much more than a gym. The Y is a community. Join the YMCA. 246-YMCA. Or go online to sfymca.org.
Have you been putting off getting your colonoscopy due to COVID restrictions? Well, there's no better time than now. Due to the COVID-19 pandemic, colorectal cancer screenings have declined by 86%, and as a result, up to 10,000 more deaths are projected over the next decade. With early detection, colon cancer has a 90% survival rate, and it may even be preventable with a colonoscopy. At Reading Endoscopy Center, our number one priority is the health and safety of our patients, and our center has always been committed to maintaining strict infection control and prevention protocols. Schedule your colonoscopy today by calling us at 530-246-7000 or visiting readingendoscopy.com. Visit readingendoscopy.com.
Hi, this is Chuck Kenny with Shasta Gas Propane. It's been a while since I've cut a new radio spot, but I feel I need to issue a warning about energy prices during this fall winter of 2021 and 22. Just as Obama said after he was elected, elections have consequences. This winter, our country will suffer some of the consequences of the last election. I'm not a politician, but I am a businessman, and many of the decisions of this current administration will drastically affect energy prices this winter and going forward. Already we are experiencing record high propane costs and prices. Remember, our motto at Shasta Gas Propane is, our customers are warm friends. We will treat you like friends this winter and do our best to help you through this high price winter. Give us a call at 365-3793. That's 365-3793.
Hi, my name's Nick Gardner. I have a show here on KCNR, Sunday mornings from 8 a.m. to 9 a.m. every other Sunday. The name of my show is Poke the Hornet's Nest.
There's no mountain I can't climb. There's no tower too high. No plane that I can't learn how to fly. What do I gotta do to get through to you to show you there ain't nothing I can't take this chainsaw?
I'm going to concentrate on local politics mainly, but we'll talk about national politics also. You'll get the view of the common citizen here in Redding, California. And remember, today is the first day of the rest of your life. Maybe it's a good time for a new perspective about what's been going on in our town, in our state, in our nation. I hope you tune in and hear the other side of the news.
Everybody, listen up!
A Moment in History by KCNR and historian Dottie Smith. Charlie's Place was a popular stopping place near Noble's Trail, just west of Shingletown. It was owned and operated by Charlie Ogburn. In 1856, Charlie sold the place to his brother John, who began holding bull and bear fights. Fighting arena was built of logs around a deep trench. Poles about 20 feet high were buried 3 feet in the ground, placed close together and securely nailed at the top. The arena was round and 60 feet across with a drop door, and the bear was prodded into the arena with hot irons where a bull was waiting for him. The spectators sat around on the outside of the stockade where they could look down on the fight on elevated seats. People came from as far away as Sacramento to attend the fights. The attendees numbered in the hundreds, and the betting was heavy. Want more Donnie Smith? Go to the Shasta Historical Society.
We're back on the Radio Free Hillsdale Hour. I'm Scott Bertram. We say hello and Happy New Year to all our listeners, including those in Traverse City, Michigan, listening on WJNL, 1210 AM and 101.3 FM. Thank you for tuning in to the Radio Free Hillsdale Hour. We're joined by John R. Lott, Jr., the Crime Research Center. CrimeResearch.org is where to find him, also on Twitter at John R. Lott, Jr. He is here on campus now as part of a CCA lecture series on campus, delivering one about the Carter Baker Commission, which is what we'll discuss here today. John, thanks so much for joining us. So tell us, what is the Carter Baker Commission? What was the Carter Baker Commission? And what were the findings that they came up with?
Well, it was a group of prominent people, actually put together by American University. Former President Carter and former Secretary of State James Baker two very prominent individuals headed the commission, but there were lots of other people on the commission. You know, well-known Democrats would have included or include people like former Democratic Senate Majority Leader Tom Daschle, for example, from South Dakota. The report came out in 2005 and had a number of recommendations that were there. They recommended government-issued photo IDs for people to be able to go and vote. They were very concerned about vote fraud, vote buying, vote intimidation that could occur with absentee ballots. You know, the notion of kind of universal mail-in ballots mm-hmm. wasn't even on the radar at that time. I assume they would have been even more concerned about that. But among the things that they looked at were what happens in other countries. They pointed out that at the time, I guess there were about 115 democratic countries in the world. And they claimed over 100 of those required government-issued photo IDs for people to be able to go and vote. So, you know, they were arguing it didn't appear to be too much of a hardship. There were things that could be done in terms of making sure there was no real cost for people getting IDs and what have you. But you look at the types of recommendations that they had, and in today's debate, you would think that these guys were right-wing, you know, crazies.
After that report was released, the commission report was released, how many states took heed of those recommendations and those findings, and how many states essentially ignored them?
It wasn't a lot of change that I think the commission report created. I mean, you're probably talking about a half dozen states or so made changes that maybe one could directly relate back to the commission report. The report got some attention. You know, the interesting thing to me right now is how last year you had people like Jimmy Carter coming forward and kind of disavowing mm-hmm. the earlier report that they had. And I have to say one thing that's striking to me, because we've gone out, the Crime Prevention Research Center has gone out and looked at other countries to kind of update the work that the Carter-Baker Commission had done at their time. You look around the world. In Europe, there are 47 countries, 46 and a half of them require government-issued photo IDs to be able to go and vote. The remaining half, which is part of the UK, is moving right now to require voter IDs. So, you know, in a couple months, you're going to have all 47 countries in Europe require government-issued photo IDs. The interesting thing to me is that how shared across the political spectrum in these countries support for those types of regulations are. And it's just not in Europe. You look at developed countries worldwide have similar views. Mm-hmm. Canada and Mexico require government-issued IDs to vote. In Canada, it's a photo ID. In Mexico, it's a photo ID as well as your thumbprint that's required. You know, you go and you look at something like absentee ballot discussion from the Carter-Baker Commission. 75% of the countries in Europe ban absentee ballots for people living in the country. Another 21% allow it, but require that you have to have government-issued photo IDs mm-hmm. to be able to go and pick up the ballot. They don't send it in the mail. And some of those countries limit it to only people who are in the military or in the hospital at the time. And they just don't take your word for it. In the United States, you know, all you have to do is say, I'm going to be out of town, and they send you an absentee ballot. And I guess my bottom line is, if the notion of vote fraud is delusional for Republicans here in the country, it's a delusion shared by the rest of the world.
What is the general sentiment that we know about the way voters and American citizens feel about this issue? Is there a disconnect between a desire on behalf of many Americans to see a more election integrity efforts made, and Democrats and many media members who are skeptical or hostile toward those efforts?
Well, there are a lot of polls that have been done on this type of thing, and there's two types of results that you see. One is, what percent of Americans support things like photo IDs? And you'll see surveys. There's a recent Rasmussen survey, Gallup survey, which indicate that about 80% of Americans support photo IDs for people to vote. Interestingly, in the Rasmussen survey, for example, you had about 84% of minorities supported government-issued photo ID requirements, and you saw 77% of non-Hispanic whites supporting it. So there's actually more support among minorities. When you go and you break it down further, you find that the strongest support is among poor people and not the wealthiest people,
mm-hmm.
and also people with the least education. People who are like high school graduates are more supportive of it than people who have PhDs. Anyway, it's kind of goes against kind of the notion that somehow these rules discriminate against uneducated or poor individuals. So that's one type of poll result. The other type of poll result are people who think that there was fraud significant enough to change the outcome of the election in this last presidential election that we had. And I think Rasmussen had it like at 49% of Americans who thought that it was significant enough. You know, you have different issues that are there.
Continuing with John R. Lott here on the Radio Free Hillsdale Hour. So, John, what effect did that have on turnout?
You think for sure there's going to be a massive drop-off in the rate that people vote.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, you're making it much more costly and difficult for people to vote. Surely not as many people are going to vote. But yet, if you look at the three presidential elections after the change in the vote versus the three beforehand, in the three beforehand, you had a 59% turnout for the presidential elections. In the three afterwards, you had a 68% turnout. You know, that's pretty massive. And there's a simple reason for that, and that is people, when they thought it was more likely that their votes actually counted, were more likely to go and show up and vote. And, you know, you have to... People talk about voter suppression and things like that. Well, if people doubt that their votes matter, it makes it harder for people to motivate themselves to go and vote. And that's a risk that we take. So, you know, you have to ask yourself, why not have these types of safeguards that you see in the rest of the world? I mean, as I mentioned, Canada and Mexico have these things, all Europe. Is now having photo IDs.
Mm-hmm.
You know, you look at the rules in the United States, and it's like there's no state in the United States that's as restrictive in terms of protections as virtually all of Europe.
John R. Lott, Jr. Find him on Twitter at John R. Lott, Jr., President, Crime Prevention Research Center. They're at crimeresearch.org and here on Hillsdale's campus to give a CCA lecture on the Carter-Baker Commission, which you will be able to find later on YouTube, on the Hillsdale YouTube account. John, thanks so much for joining us here on the Radio Free Hillsdale Hour.
It's great. Great to talk to you. Thanks.
Up next, Dr. Matthew Gaetano from Hillsdale's History Department on the connection between the Renaissance and the Reformation. I'm Scott Bertram. This is the Radio Free Hillsdale Hour.
Good morning, Reading. This is Rick Hughes, host of The Flatline. Heard every Sunday morning on KCNR 96.5 FM at 7 a.m. in the morning. Just want you to know that God has given us two ends, one to think with and one to sit on. And success in life depends on which one you use. It's heads you win and tails you lose. Come join me on The Flatline and learn about God's tremendous problem-solving device. 7 a.m. every Sunday morning, 96.5 FM, KCNR.
Turn your someday into today. The Shasta College spring semester begins January 19th, and now's the time to register for classes. First-time, full-time students, get your first 2 years tuition-free. At Shasta College, we'll teach you the skills, give you the knowledge, and provide the training you need to unlock your potential. Reskill, upskill, or get transfer ready at Shasta College. Go to www.shastacollege.edu/apply.
Premier, your friendly oil change.
Many accidents are caused by worn wiper blades. Let's face it, it's just uncomfortable when you're driving in the rain, snow, fog, and everything else in between with worn blades. At Premier Oil Change, when you buy one wiper blade, you get the second blade free. Yes, now through January 15th, you buy one wiper blade and get the second one free for as little as $15.99. At Premier Oil Change, we make maintaining your car easy. There's no need for an appointment. You don't drop your car off or wait. Just pull in, enjoy a free beverage and free Wi-Fi while our trained technicians perform our comprehensive 30-point certified service. Earn free oil changes with Premier Rewards. Learn more at PremierOilChange.com or visit us in Palo Cedro. Premier is in the Holiday Market Shopping Center or in Redding on Lake Boulevard next to Waterworks Park and our newest location in Anderson across from Round Table Pizza. All locations, you get a free car wash with every oil change. Home of the friendly oil change.
This is the Cigar of the Month from Tobacco and Brew, brought to you by Liga Privada. The Underground Sungrown is the perfect balance of Nicaraguan long filler tobacco. Draped in a lovely Connecticut sungrown wrapper, this stick received a 92 rating. With hints of spice, wood, and espresso, this robust cigar ends on notes of cinnamon. Come down to the best cigar shop around, Tobacco and Brew, Redding, California.
Slow down. Hi, this is Dr. Trudy Pratt. My chiropractic and nutrition practice in downtown Redding has been helping people feel better for over 20 years. We pride ourselves in really listening to our patients and then tailoring a program of nutrition, chiropractic care, massage, and exercise that's just right for you. The results can be dramatic. Call 244-7873. That's 244-7873. Thank you.
At Shasta Regional Medical Group, we're focused on the health matters that matter to you, like having a primary care doctor you trust. Our physicians put patients first. They take the time to listen to your needs and concerns, and they provide the information you need to make good decisions about your own health. At Shasta Regional Medical Group, you have an integrated network of caregivers and specialists working to serve you in a compassionate, patient-centered environment. We're conveniently located right across the street from Shasta Regional Medical Center. To make an appointment, call Shasta Regional Medical Group today at 605-4260 or visit us online at ShastaRegionalMedicalGroup.com. Shasta Regional Medical Group. Your primary care is our primary concern.
Join Aaron Ryan and Bill Cundiff for We the People Radio every Sunday from noon until 2. Our expert guests will give you the whole story rather than a bunch of sound bites. Our commercial-free archives are always available at wethepeopleradio.us.
Sponsored in part by Pape Machinery, located at 3119 Twinview Boulevard, for all your local John Deere Ag and Turf products. Join us every Sunday from noon until 2, wethepeopleradio.us.
What shall we do about them?
Wind River Resort and Casino with Primal Fighting Championship presents
Fight Night.
Extreme mixed martial arts cage fighting at Wind River Resort and Casino on Saturday, January 15th.
It's in the cage.
Full contact fighting.
This intense action-packed event sells out. Get your tickets now.
Call 1-800-280-UIN to reserve a room in our hotel and purchase tickets.
Great entertainment is happening with cage fighting at Wind River Resort and Casino on Saturday, January 15th.
Tickets start at $35 plus fee.
Must be 21 to attend.
Welcome back to the Radio Free Hillsdale Hour. I'm Scott Bertram. You can get an email every time there's a new episode of the program. Go to radiohour.hillsdale.edu and enter your email address. That's radiohour.hillsdale.edu. Joined by Dr. Matthew Gaetano, Associate Professor of History at Hillsdale College. Dr. Gaetano, thanks for joining us.
Great to be with you.
Speaking today about the connection between the Renaissance and the Reformation. The Renaissance comes first. Can we in some way consider it a pre-Reformation?
Yeah, so this is a big issue. It's a really difficult one. So, again, if we have this wrong-headed view of the Italian Renaissance as secular or pagan, then it almost seems as if the Reformation is a is a kind of refusal
right.
of what the Renaissance was trying to do. But if you have the view that I hold and that I think is rooted in some of the best scholarship available, that there is something about kind of moral renewal, educational renewal, and in the case of figures like Ficino and Pico and others, theological renewal, spiritual renewal, the renewal of the church, trying to have priests who are more learned, and so on and so forth. I think that we see some points of continuity, certainly with the central practices of Luther, Melanchthon, Calvin in the first generation and into the second generation of the Reformation, especially this deep knowledge of the ancient languages,
mm-hmm.
right? The ways in which Calvin and the Institutes, very eloquent Latin, and the ways in which all of them not only have Latin, of course, but Greek and eventually Hebrew, and are able to go to the sources, go to the Bible, with all of those linguistic tools, scholarly tools at their disposal, which you know, the Renaissance played a significant role in bringing about. But I would suggest that, and we'll think more about this over the next few minutes, but I would want to say that for Luther, and I think this is true of Melanchthon and Calvin and others, right, the central concern of what we call the Reformation, of what's happening in the 15 teens, 20s, 30s, is he believes the kernel is the proclamation of the gospel, of justification by faith alone. And that, the idea of the good news and salvation and so on, these Christians in the 14th, 15th century are interested in that, but they do not have the view
mm-hmm.
that somehow, you know, the gospel had been kind of suppressed or covered up by, you know, by the papacy and by, you know, false teaching in the later Middle Ages. That's not something that you see present in the major figures like Petrarch, Valla, Ficino, Pico, Erasmus, and beyond.
So what humanist ideas were the reformers accepting of? Were there other ideas they rejected?
Right. So when it comes to acceptance, I would say this idea of going ad fontes, back to the sources, and having the linguistic competence, the scholarly
right.
competence,
right.
the historical context, that's something that I think many of the humanist scholars and the reformers, many of whom were humanists in their own right, share. I think the idea, and again, we don't want to take this too far, but the idea that there's something wrong right now. Something's got to give. Something's not right. That's something you see in Petrarch. That's something you see, I think, in Pico, in Erasmus, and in Luther and Calvin. They have a different diagnosis
mm-hmm.
of what that problem is. But the idea that there's something wrong here, and that in antiquity there's a path of renewal, and I think you know for Petrarch the early church fathers are going to be a part of that, but also just the Roman Republic, even the Roman Empire, right? Ancient Rome. For the reformers, that is going to be, of course, Scripture, but also the first five centuries of the church,
mm-hmm.
the early councils, Augustine, right, the great church fathers, that ancient primitive church, not just the first century, the first five centuries or so and beyond, that's where there's resources for the renewal of what they deem to be, you know, a rather dark time spiritually in their early lives.
You touched on this just briefly, but was it common for the reformers to also be humanists?
Yeah, so I think Melanchthon, who is Luther's right-hand man in Wittenberg, is certainly a humanist. A Greek scholar, a professor of Greek, eventually becomes actually one of the great commentators on Aristotle, even though Luther had a kind of love-hate relationship. Well, you know, a lot of criticisms of Aristotle, but it's being taught in Wittenberg during Luther's tenure. I think Luther had many humanistic tools. He, again, had he loved a lot of ancient literature. He knew Greek. I mean, he translated the Bible in a few weeks. Just remarkable scholarly achievement in that regard. But Martin Luther was somewhat contemptuous, and I think this goes to your point about things they disagreed about.
Mm-hmm.
I think Luther would look at the mainstream humanists and say, oh, you think you're going to get moral renewal and virtue just through eloquence and reading ancient literature? You know, maybe civic virtue, but the virtue that really matters, the good works that really matter, they need to come from a good tree.
Mm-hmm.
Good fruit comes from good trees, and good trees, that's going to be through, you know, the imputation of Christ's righteousness, through the gift of salvation.
Did the Reformation in any way end up also influencing the Renaissance?
Yes. So, you know, we don't want to think, I mean, there are debates about when did the Renaissance end. In a certain way, if we think of humanism as a devotion to the studia humanitatis, so poetry, grammar, eloquence, history, moral philosophy, in a lot of ways, that was the bread and butter of education into the 19th and 20th centuries.
Mm-hmm.
And that was an achievement of the Renaissance humanists. As a movement, you could say it ended perhaps in Florence in the 1490s or in Rome in the 1520s with the sack of Rome. But the basic educational vision of the humanists had great staying power. But then once the Reformation comes on the scene, I think, you know, of course, that's going to give great attention to even more editions of the Church Fathers, of the ancient church councils, scholarship on scripture, humanism. At times you see us, and this isn't widespread, but there's interest in other languages,
mm-hmm.
right? Aramaic, right? What they would have called, you know, Chaldean, you know, Hebrew, becomes a major part of, especially Protestant university education for ministers and so on. So that if you see this attention to language as a key part of the Renaissance, which I do, that then you've added, you not only have Latin, which was the key in the beginning, then you get Greek in the early 15th century or late 14th century, then it's beginning with Pico in the late Renaissance, but the ways in which particularly Hebrew becomes, you know, something that at least highly educated, especially Protestant, but generally, you know, Catholics as well, theologians, would have been expected at least, if not to know, at least to be haunted when they don't know it. Where that wasn't something that, again, Aquinas in the Middle Ages, or even Petrarch in the early Renaissance, would have been all that worried about. So that those are the kinds of ways in which this scholarly educational tradition coming out of the Renaissance, I think, is inflected and expanded by some of these Reformation issues.
Dr. Matthew Gaetano, Associate Professor of History at Hillsdale College, talking about the connection between the Renaissance and the Reformation. Dr. Gaetano, thanks for joining us here on the Radio Free Hillsdale Hour.
So good to be with you.
That will wrap up this edition of the Radio Free Hillsdale Hour. Our thanks to Dr. Scott Atlas, new member of the Hillsdale College Academy for Science and Freedom. We also talked with John R. Lott, president of the Crime Prevention Research Center, recently on campus to give a lecture on the Carter-Baker Commission. And Dr. Matthew Gaetano from Hillsdale's History Department on the similarities between the Reformation and the Renaissance. You can hear new episodes every week on this station. You also can find extended versions of some of our interviews, including Dr. Atlas and John R. Lott this week, on the podcast. Find it at SoundCloud, Apple Podcasts, Google Podcasts, TuneIn, Stitcher, Spotify, or Amazon Podcasts. Search for The Radio Free Hillsdale Hour. Follow the show on Twitter at Hillsdale Radio, or find us on Facebook. You can email us, radiohour@hillsdale.edu. To find out more about Hillsdale College, you also can go to hillsdale.edu. Until next week, I'm Scott Bertram, and this has been the Radio Free Hillsdale Hour.
Alan Gordon, Coach Master Collision. Although Coach Master is recognized as the authority and specialist in frame and suspension, we are primarily your auto body and truck collision repair center. This includes all vehicles, Lexus, Honda, or pickup trucks. Our technicians are highly trained and have the most advanced equipment to ensure a complete and quality repair. With our knowledge and the insurance claim process, all we need is your claim number to handle your claim. Coach Master has a great working relationship with all insurance companies. This ensures a complete repair with quality parts and a delay-free process. At Coach Master, in our 50 years in business, we've experienced almost every situation imaginable in a claim. This experience and personal dedication to the repair of your vehicle sets Coachmaster apart from all other choices. And yes, if we can't fix it, no one can.
Learn more online at CoachmasterAutobody.com.
Hi, this is Mark from Haven Humane Society. It has been a challenging couple of years, and through it all, our amazing team has continued to save lives. We have so many fantastic animals that are looking for their forever homes, and with adoption fees so low, now is the time to add to your family. With puppies, kittens, dogs, cats, and so many more, we have the perfect addition. Come join our team as a volunteer and help in an area that works for you. Walking dogs, socializing cats, helping in our veterinary hospital, or folding laundry. We have many opportunities and welcome all volunteers. For more information, please visit our website at havenhumane.org or follow us on Facebook. On behalf of the entire Haven team, thank you for all of your continued support as together we get closer every day to North State with no more homeless pets.
At Shasta Regional Medical Group, we're focused on the health matters that matter to you, like having a primary care doctor you trust. Our physicians put patients first. They take the time to listen to your needs and concerns, and they provide the information you need to make good decisions about your own health. At Shasta Regional Medical Group, you have an integrated network of caregivers and specialists working to serve you in a compassionate, patient-centered environment. We're conveniently located right across the street from Shasta Regional Medical Center. To make an appointment, call Shasta Regional Medical Group today at 605-4260 or visit us online at ShastaRegionalMedicalGroup.com. Shasta Regional Medical Group. Your primary care is our primary concern.
This is Ted Leidy with Northern Firearms Instruction. In response to COVID-19, NFI has scheduled online Zoom classroom sessions for CCW and CCW Renewal. These online courses will be followed up with live fire range training, which will complete your certification. Follow-on range training is done with the same great instructors you've come to know and love. Give us a call today at 530-999-1822 or visit us online at usgunpro.com. This is Ted Leidy, and remember, it's our right and our responsibility.
Aloha, this is Kevin, operations manager at Maui Bob's Office Cleaning. A professionally cleaned business sends a message to your paying customers. It says you are a company that cares about your image and always presenting the very best impression. Time after time, I've talked to clients who shopped for the lowest price, and after a few months, realized that their professional image was suffering. They didn't know who was actually coming into their offices to do the cleaning, and they just weren't getting the value they were paying for. Be wary of big-name companies that take your money, then hire unknown contractors to do the work. Since 1987, Maui Bob's Office Cleaning, your local professionals, have been offering the best in office cleaning by our screened, bonded, and insured staff. Take pride in your business and say aloha to your customers with the professional cleaning services from Maui Bob's Office Cleaning. Call 221-5868, 221-5868, MauiBob'sOfficeCleaning.com.
The YMCA is welcoming new members to come and enjoy the many choices the YMCA has to offer. The YMCA has a variety of fitness activities, including swimming, aqua aerobics, cardio, weights, group power classes, and booty yoga. There's over 100 classes to choose from. The YMCA is so much more than a gym. The Y is a community. Join the YMCA. 246-YMCA. Or go online to sfymca.org.
I expected to be a lot easier.
I didn't know what step to take next.
I was transitioning from the military. I was a vehicle gunner.
An avionics specialist.
I missed my unit. My family.
Playing with my daughter, I'd felt like a stranger.
I didn't have a clear sense of what to do next.
And then I thought, if I'm going through this, other veterans have gone through it too, right? So I reached out, and I saw that I wasn't alone.
Go to maketheconnection.net to learn how other veterans have overcome the challenges of transitioning out of the military.
The news from Town Hall is brought to you on KCNR Shasta Reading by Shasta Regional Medical Center. The news from Town Hall is brought to you on KCNR Shasta Reading by Shasta Regional Medical Center. Your life, your health, your choice. Shasta Regional Medical Center.